recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You are listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins. Fourth episode of C4 from CHB. That's Chris and Clay's Canucks commentary on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris Golden at Lightforce, and as always, joining me is
Clay Emo at Canuck Clay in the Twitter world.
In the Twitter world, as if you don't exist in the real world.
Well, I think more people know me in the Twitter world than people want to acknowledge in the real world, but that's my issue. Don't worry about it today.
Well, I would actually, you know, wager a guess that there's probably more people know me on Twitter, too. I got like 1,900 and some odd followers. I don't think I have that many friends.
Are those 1,900 real people, Chris?
I would say at least 1,890 of them are.
Very good. That's a good percentage.
So, but we got some exciting news here since our last podcast 5 weeks ago. We made it into the new and noteworthy section on iTunes. We're like one of the hottest podcasts out there. And then we took a 5-week hiatus because we had nothing to talk about.
But speaking of new and noteworthy, tell our loyal readers, listeners, who's with us today.
Well, who is with us?
I don't know. He just showed up about half an hour ago.
All right, well, since neither of you are going to give me a proper introduction, I guess I should just introduce myself as Matt Lee, also of the Canucks Hockey Blog. Proud to be joined here with two very experienced podcasters such as yourselves. I feel like the trade deadline acquisition, I'm going to be like the Derek Roy for this team right now. And meaning I will be completely invisible and probably this will be the last you'll hear of me.
Well, I thought we were bringing in the pro. This guy's the radio man.
Okay, fine. I'll say I'm the Marian Hossa of the trade deadline.
Much better.
Does that work?
Who would you rather be, Marian Hossa or Derek Roy?
I'll be the Jerome Iginla.
Oh,
that worked out really well for Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, and Jerome felt so bad, so he's now into Boston.
Yes.
Yep. He knew what he was doing.
Well, he must have been. Yeah. I mean, and I think we talked about this before. I still can't get over the fact that Jerome Iginla has gone and signed in Boston after spurning him, where the trade was essentially a done deal. The ink simply hadn't touched paper. And now he's gone back, said, "I'm so sorry. Please don't hate me."
Yeah.
I don't think he said that.
Well, I don't know. I might be making it up. My sources say.
He'll be a very good addition in Boston, which is sad to say if you're a Canucks fan.
Yeah, that's true.
Good addition to Boston, but not good enough to go to Team Canada. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes, I think. Mm-hmm.
But before we get into Team Canada, let's talk about another Team Canada candidate, and that's Roberto Luongo.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, and you hear this on Twitter, you hear this comments everywhere. Why do you keep talking about Luongo? And yet, every week, something new occurs. Over the last few weeks, we've seen him finally come out, break the silence of the press, talking to James Duthie on TSN, and he talked about how it was kind of like a divorce where he had moved on, and then she wanted him back, and it's kind of awkward. He shared how when he found out that Corey Schneider had been traded, he blacked out, or he came close to blacking out, which I don't know what it's like. I've never been traded before, or seen I was going to say best friend, but who knows? Maybe they hated each other. A coworker traded. So I can't say I've blacked out thinking I was going. But what are your sense on this?
Well, first of all, I have a lot of bad high school flashbacks now that we're bringing up all this kind of drama. But you got to remember. Sorry, Clay, go ahead.
You're not talking about blacking out, though. You're talking about drama.
No, just relationships with girls that just never really materialized for me. But
and it took us 4 episodes to get this guy on here?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
We're not going to talk about that, okay? This was a very sensitive time for me. But anyways, on your comments on Roberto Luongo, yes, it was a bit of a bizarre situation. With James Duthie, he revealed that, yeah, there's been some turbulence. He had some second guesses. He doesn't know right now about his future in Vancouver. For me, I think it was fairly justified for him. If you're a guy like Roberto Luongo, you expected to be traded somewhere in Florida or Tampa Bay, and it didn't happen. And at the trade deadline, it didn't happen again. For Roberto Luongo, he was packed. He was ready to go. We even saw him tweet a picture of a bag that he brought on a road trip just in case he would get traded. And to see none of that happen, I think a lot of us, him included, were very shocked.
Do the Canucks fans forgive him if he has a 2 or 3 bad game? Not even forgive him, sorry, that's not even the right word. But what's going to happen when he has a 2 or 3 bad game stretch? And in the past, we could go to Schneider. We know that there's someone just as good coming in. And now, you know, you look at Eddie Lack or whoever else is going to be the backup. I think there's going to be more tension, more frightening. That's not even a word. But I think there's going to be more tension and more fear of what happens if he goes through a poor streak this season. Because he may very well do so.
Well, October.
Yeah.
I mean, case in point, every season he starts off slow. We're going to probably see it in October. And I think you're right. Imagine him having a rough patch of 2 or 3 games. There'll be lynch mobs outside of Rogers Arena. There'll be burning effigy of Roberto Luongo outside of the Roger Nielsen statue.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. That's how insane things have gotten. That's how crazy this market happens to be. I'm curious as to how that all pans out. But I think Schneider was just the go-to. If there's something that Vancouver likes as a sports fan, is a backup goaltender.
Hmm.
I mean, we had Bob Esensa as like the second coming of Patrick Waugh when he backed up. Who was it he backed up? Was it
Urbe or was it?
I thought it might have been Cloutier at one point.
Who knows?
But when people chanting backup Bob, backup Bob, they'll be chanting Eddie Lack's name or. Yeah, whoever we happen to sign if we decide Eddie's not ready.
Yeah. So, Matt, Chris, do you think, as it stands right now, 1 month out, you think Luongo's going to have a good year?
I think he'll be fine. I've seen a lot of people even go so far as to say that they think Luongo can win his very first Vezina this season. Wow. A lot of people seem to forget in the PCS era, and I'm going to use that as the pre-Corey Schneider era, Luongo was still a very good goaltender, and he still is a good goaltender. Sure, he's going to have a couple slumps and a couple bumps along the road, but he's still a very good goaltender who's still good for maybe 35 to 40 wins a season. And I think for a lot of people, they're thinking that Luongo is going to just be a very terrible goaltender for the Canucks this season now that he's dealing with this sideshow that is being traded, whether or not. And then there's the whole Corey Schneider era that we're going to have to move on from. But people forget that Luongo is still a good goaltender. If we can go back to when before Corey Schneider was the backup, who was their last backup? Was it Andrew Raycroft?
We had Raycroft, LaBarbera.
But the most recent one, I think, was Raycroft, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure. We'll go with it.
But if we can remember in that era, Luongo was still a great goaltender. Are we that far removed from that specific era that suddenly we're writing off Luongo as a poor to mediocre goaltender?
Well, as the average Canucks fan, apparently we are.
It's just, it appalls me that people think that suddenly Luongo is going to be a terrible goaltender. Yes, we're saddled with him for possibly the next 8 to 9 years. But at the same time, he's still going to be a good goaltender between the pipes. And let's not forget, Eddie Lack is no short spring chicken either. He's going to be able to at least fill in admirably to the extent that Andrew Raycroft or Jason LaBarbera were able to do back in the day.
Well, to that note, I mean, I think the only concern about Eddie Lack is the fact that he is coming off surgery. Mm-hmm. I think he had hip surgery. And obviously, hip surgery or any type of joint surgery when you're a goaltender is something to be at least somewhat concerned with. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Luongo is going to acquit himself well. And we've seen quite often when he's got a chip on his shoulder, he plays out of this world. Like, I would half expect that the Roberto Luongo would get 81 wins straight. And in game 82, moments before getting the win, simply walk out of the net, let the puck go in, flip everyone a finger, and say, screw you. Because that's how large that chip on the shoulder is.
It's funny you mention that, though, because although just 5 minutes ago I was talking about what's going to happen if he goes through a rough spell and hopefully the crowd won't turn on him, I do think, Matt, as you said, there is a portion of the Canucks fans that think he's going to have a poor year, but I still think there's a larger portion that are really rooting for him, right? You've seen what he's gone through for the past 2 years, and especially in the last 6 months, And yes, there's these stories. Some people wish he talked earlier, right after the trade, or why did he have to wait until right before Team Canada camp? But I think the bottom line is people are rooting for him. People are Canucks fans overall. So by default, they want him to do well. And it would be a great feel-good story.
And I'm glad you brought that up, the fans that are motivated to see him play. Bringing up that topic of motivation, let's remember that there is a lot of incentive for Luongo to have a very good season. The Olympics, this being an Olympic year, he wants to be that guy again for Team Canada. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. Despite the fact he's won the gold in 2010, he had his moment in the sun. As a guy who's probably got an ego pretty hefty size, he's going to want to be the number one guy again. He's going to want to give Canada the chance to win a gold medal again. He has all the world to believe that he has to have a very good first half of the season, at least, so that he can make a case for being the starting goaltender.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, and maybe that's why we brought you on here, so it makes me look smart. But I'll actually look at 2010 Olympics and how people said that Canada won in spite of Luongo.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that quite striking, because Luongo played significantly better than Brodeur did. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brodeur started to show maybe his age a little. But what was in the gold medal game? Was it Parisi that had
scored,
that?
Yeah. That scored the tying goal.
Scored the tying goal. But there was a save in overtime or near the end of the game. And then there was the Dimitra save.
I believe it was on Joe Pavelski, but Pavelski, I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a giveaway in our end.
It was shortly before the Crosby goal, right?
Yeah, it was shortly before the Crosby goal. And I think if Brodeur's in net, that's a goal. And that's not knocking Brodeur. It's just his style of play was not conducive to the the Grant Fuhr methodology of mm-hmm. do whatever you can to keep the puck out.
Mm-hmm.
And Dimitra. I mean, case in point, Dimitra has a wide open cage and Luongo gets over and stops him.
And of course you're talking about the semifinal game against mm-hmm. the Mac. Yeah.
And I mean, that's the style of goaltender that Luongo is. It's almost as if in his first season, or first two seasons here in Vancouver, when Luongo was lights out, because I think he all of a sudden saw that he had all of this freedom, he was no longer in Florida, he had a chance to win, and he was stopping everything. Also look at the team that was playing in front of him, very defensively sound. So with Luongo stopping everything, everyone became of the belief that Luongo is your lights out goaltender. He boards it up. If he lets in one goal, he's not done a good enough job. Now, obviously, if the Canucks can't score, that's probably where we see it. But he's not that type of goaltender. He's the Grant Fuhr type of goaltender. He's the one who stops that one shot that needs to be stopped, but he needs production in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And if he was simply a goaltender that was lights out, Florida would have been winning Stanley Cup after Stanley Cup. Because he stopped, I saw there was a few games where he was stopping 40-plus shots in a game, mm-hmm. and they were losing by one or two goals.
Well, we'll see. I know we're going to talk about it a bit later. You know, the defense is basically the same as last year, but we can go through that in a bit. So, he's going to be basically the same team in front of him, plus or minus one or two players. So he's going to have to be on top of his game.
If we're putting a bow on this whole Luongo topic, let's talk first about, is he going to win with the Canucks? Is he going to start for Team Canada? What do you guys think about that?
I hope that, you know how in 2002, wasn't it Curtis Joseph that started and then Brodeur kind of Brodeured him and took it to the gold medal? And then 2010, Brodeur started, Luongoed him and then became, really, really, he kind of took it to the gold medal. I'm looking at both things. I'm looking at Team Canada, as you mentioned. Is he going to start? I think he's going to start. I think Babcock has a lot of faith in him. He's won before. I just hope that he doesn't have a poor start, and then he gets
Luongoed.
Yeah.
By Carey Price.
Or Corey Crawford.
He gets priced out of the game.
Nicely done.
That was the worst pun ever. I'm leaving this podcast.
Yeah, well, you think I'm bad now. We still got a half an hour to go.
Okay, well, let's bring up the other question. Luongo playing for the Canucks. Can he get it done with Vancouver under a new head coach?
Oh, I think so. I actually think Tortorella is probably the coach Luongo has always needed.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that, AV misplayed Luongo or misplayed his goaltender situation. I mean, he may have, he may not have. We don't know what goes on in mm-hmm. the dressing room. But Tortorella just seems to me to be the type of coach that will go and put him out there, tell him this is what your role is on the team, and this is what I expect of you. In between that, everything's up in the air. So Luongo, I think, responds well to that. When Luongo seems to know what's going on in his world, he plays to that. And that's where we started to see, especially last year, I mean, in the season before, when, you know, he was constantly looking over his shoulder. Like, am I going to get the hook? Am I not? Am I going to start? Was it 2 years ago? Luongo gets a shutout. And what's the rule in hockey? You get a shutout, you start the next game. Schneider starts. Schneider gets a shutout. What happens the game after that? Schneider starts again. And so somehow, it didn't matter what Luongo did. He couldn't get those, you know, that consistent starter, follow the rules of the game. Tortorella seems to be more of the type of coach that follows the code.
And sticking with Tortorella, I think, I don't know if this has any correlation with it, but let's not forget, Tortorella coached a pretty good goaltender in New York in Henrik Lundqvist. If there's any sort of correlation, maybe John Tortorella knows how to handle those elite franchise type of goaltenders, and maybe he can return Luongo to that previous form that we had been used to seeing. One more thing on Luongo, though. Is there some sort of mental relief for him that he doesn't have to look over his shoulder at the guy who's challenging him for that starter's role with Corey Schneider? Because you know he's not going to get challenged by Eddie Lack this upcoming season.
Absolutely. I think he's going to have a great year because of that, Matt. He's got clear expectations. He knows he's the number one, doesn't have to fight for it. So that's number one reason. Number two, he's a good professional and he's a good goalie. Number three, as you mentioned, he's got a lot to play for. Those three things, I think, leads to a really strong year for him because he does not have to look over his shoulder, as you mentioned.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
And I was going to say, I think they, both Eddie and Roberto answered that on Twitter.
Oh, that's right.
Right? You know, Roberto...
Said no funny business.
No funny business. And Eddie then said, don't worry, I'll sit on the bench with my iPad.
That's right.
Nicely done.
One more prediction. I'm not sure what you guys think. Will Luongo be a Canuck at this time next year?
I say yes.
I say yes as well.
All right, I'm buying into the hype. I'll say yes as well. Yeah. We're going to move on to another guy who's competing for a spot on Team Canada. That's Dan Hamhuis for the Vancouver Canucks. Your guys' thoughts on whether or not he can crack a roster spot.
So, Dan Hamhuis, I was reading, he's one of the only left-handed left defensemen. There's just only a handful, like two or three of them. And from what I understand, that's the one position where there seems to be, outside of maybe goaltending, that seems to be the one position where there's some movement opportunity. And I think Hamhuis is a stretch to make the Olympic roster, and that's not a knock against him. He's just up against some traditional competition. And we've seen in the NHL, let alone in the Olympic game, that you dress your, you know, best defenseman regardless of what position they play, because you throw the maple leaf on the jersey and you do whatever it takes. If Bouwmeester was told he's starting in net, good old Canadian boy, throws on the pads, and in the net he goes, and that's sort of the way it's been. So that's where I think when you look at what's on the blue line, Hamhuis doesn't necessarily crack that top six or top eight. And if he does, that's great. That's good on him, but I'm not holding out a significant amount of hope that Dan actually makes the final roster.
If he makes it, and it would be a great feel-good story for Canucks fans, but he makes it as a number eight, and if so, I don't think he plays, you know, maybe in one prelim game, if that... You know, you look at the locks of Weber, of Keith, of Doughty, and then you got guys in front of him like Stahl, Bouwmeester, Subban, Letang, Boyle, even guys that are going to get kind of a lot of consideration ahead of him. It would feel good. It would be great. Yes, he plays on the left side, and Babcock has talked about, especially his defenseman, he doesn't want them, you know, going too far out of the comfort zones. But I think it's a bit of a stretch. But it's something that we'll be following for the next 3 months for sure. And who knows? He has a lights out start to the season, and maybe he gets a look closer to February.
There's been a lot of talk about Jay Bouwmeester making this roster, which might be shocking to a lot of people, myself including, just because we haven't seen that elite level of play from Jay Bouwmeester since he played for the Florida Panthers. But the thing that he does have going for him, not only is Ken Hitchcock going to be behind the bench as an assistant coach this winter, he's also got Alex Pietrangelo, who's his partner in St. Louis, who, in my mind, is a lock for Team Canada, is Alex Pietrangelo. Pietrangelo's yin to his yang, and for me, I feel like Bouwmeester's got the inside track as a left-handed defenseman to make the team over Dan Hamhuis, which, again, is another knock in Dan Hamhuis not making this team.
Yeah, I'm looking at the only opportunity Dan plays his way into the team is one, actually playing his way into the team, having just some offensively superior season that he's not known for in Vancouver, or the other option is injury. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see a slightly compressed NHL schedule, obviously with the Olympic break built in. And so that increases the opportunity for something unfortunate happening. And to me, that's where Dan plays in. It's possible, though, that Dan does maybe make the Olympic roster, but not so much the the starting lineup.
Just a quick aside, what did you guys think of when you saw the first shots of that ball hockey on that big, you know, floor?
Oh, I mean, what are they doing out there? I mean, I know the insurance costs are through the roof, but you got to get the guys out on the ice. Did the Team USA guys have any on-ice drills?
Yes.
So what does that tell you?
Well, okay, so apparently it's insurance issues. Is that Hockey Canada balked at the amount of money it would cost to
insure the players. But USA Hockey had no problem biting the bullet.
Economies of scale. Like, you know, Hockey USA, I think, has, if not equal, access to cash that Hockey Canada does, maybe more. And the United States invests far more money into its Olympic program. What I find odd, though, is you look at, let's say, you know, how many Canucks have been skating on ice, you know, sheets out at UBC, here in Richmond, at the, you know, six rinks or eight rinks or whatever it is. And, you know, if they got hurt there, you know they're insured. You know that it's covered. So how is it that they bring them together? And to me, if I would think that they're actually probably safer on ice. And that's not to say that, you know, playing, you know, ball hockey is any more dangerous than ice hockey, just that it's ice is what they're accustomed to. You know, let's say someone, you know, wrists one, it takes off, and it, you know, catches Luongo wearing no pads. To me, there's an insurance issue there. Like, it just seems so odd. I mean, cool to watch. I'd love to play floor hockey with them, but still.
I don't want to make a big deal out of nothing, but when I see the USA hockey players playing on actual ice, and I see Team Canada's guys playing ball hockey on an open rink, it just seems to me that Team Canada's going in a little, maybe underestimating their opponents or just not feeling that they need to be as prepared as Team USA is. Because, again, Team USA, they were going to have some revenge in their minds. They want to come back and win the gold. And then there's this whole Team Russia thing. They're going to want to win on home ice as well. For me, it worries me as a Canadian that Team Canada isn't taking Sochi seriously, but maybe I'm just making a mountain out of a molehill.
Well, I don't know if it's that they're taking the tournament lightly. I actually think if it comes down to the fact that they didn't want to pay for insurance and its cost, that we see that's very so often in Canada.
Sure.
I mean, it's across all sports. It's in the Olympics where cost becomes an issue, and so we make do, and that sort of is what makes us you know, a resilient nation when it comes to athletics. Like, there are Olympic athletes that I think win in spite of the limitations placed upon them because of cost. Now, this is odd because we're not used to seeing it in hockey. Hockey gets the cash. Yet, this occurs and we make do with what we have. It definitely had some compelling imagery though. And I can't remember who it was on Team USA that was actually asked, what do you think about Canada's squad playing ball hockey? And he had said, wow, that'd be kind of cool. It'd be pretty fun to do that. And that's something, you know, you look back, anytime professional hockey players get to go back and play something that they were playing a style or a fashion as to they were when they were growing up. You know, I remember the Canucks were in Ottawa one year and they had an outside practice on a on a pond or a lake or wherever it was. And after that, the Canucks went on like a and was 7 or 8 game win streak because all of a sudden they had fun, built the chemistry, relax, whatever it does, and boom, off they go. So I could see it being potentially good, or at least into their favor.
Well, what's done is done. They were on the floor. Team USA was on the ice. But as long as the Team Canada does not do the same sort of mug shots that Team USA did, I think we'll be okay. You guys see those things?
Yes, I saw the Phil Kessel headshot. That was sexy.
I missed it.
They did these portrait studios of all the USA players in their brand new USA uniforms with their USA faces on, I guess. And
yeah.
Matt, I think it's safe to say that
they looked a little rapey.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it makes for good podcasts, that's for sure.
Well, you want to see this headshot. It's gonna make you feel very uncomfortable very quickly. This is a brooding shot of Phil Kessel.
Take a look at this. Look at it. Chris, it's worth, even though we're on radio.
Wow.
I mean, I can't tell if Phil Kessel has been drinking all night or he just got out of bed.
And what did he eat just before they took that picture?
I want to say sunny side up eggs.
You know, it looks like he's been going to the Dustin Bufflin School of Summer Fitness.
Oh, you see his picture.
Well, Phil Kessel has always had a little bit of baby fat, but that's never stopped him from being a guy who can score 40 goals in a season.
Yeah, fair enough.
One more thing, while we're talking about Team Canada hopefuls, Corey Crawford gets handed out the cash today, 36 over 6 years. Is it a lot of money or is it fair value for a guy who's contending for a spot?
Well, in the new NHL, you have to play, you know, really bet on future. I think the Blackhawks are looking at a goaltender who provided them really one extremely successful season, got them a Stanley Cup, and are simply looking at the market saying, we need to lock him up before someone else comes and offers him either stupid money or he chooses to go elsewhere.
I agree, and we keep talking, and we've talked about in this podcast of the cap going up in the next couple of years or so. So maybe $6 million for 1 year seems like quite a bit, especially for a team that's trying to lock up and keep guys like Keith Seabrook, Taves, Kane, Sharp, all those guys. But maybe going forward, I agree with you, Chris, a chance to lock up a good goalie, a Stanley Cup winning goalie, and one for, you know, what's going to be maybe a middle to high, but not an extraordinary amount of money for five, six years down the road. It's a good move for the Blackhawks.
I'm not going to disagree with the decision to lock him up long term, but for me, I'm wondering why they decided to make this move, because in 2010, after they won the Stanley Cup, they decided to let Antti Niemi go, and Niemi was a big part of that Stanley Cup run. He was the guy who had to just be solid. Sound familiar? Corey Crawford just had to be solid for the Blackhawks to win the Stanley Cup, but they weren't willing to keep Niemi long-term because he wanted a long-term deal with a bit of money, just like the money that Corey Crawford got. And yet, here we are. Antti Niemi this past season was a Vezina candidate. A lot of people forget that. Has Corey Crawford ever been a Vezina candidate? No. That's why I'm wondering why they decided to make this decision.
Well, I wonder if the Blackhawks don't look at having let Antti Niemi go for all of those reasons as also one of the reasons why they then stumbled somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say that Crawford isn't a good goaltender. I mean, you know, the Canucks beat them in Game 7, not because of Crawford.
Yeah.
I mean, Crawford was one of the reasons why the Blackhawks were able to get to Game 7.
Why and Patrick the fact that Sharp's snapshot away from being the
Where Luongo makes that one big save, right? But I think that it's just the current reality, the way the NHL is structured, and next year there's going to be a whole lot of stupid money available. I mean, the cap is going up. There is no one that said the cap's going to be anywhere near it is this year. It's as if it's artificially low. Every team, even teams that don't want to spend, are at the cap max. The fact that the Canucks have $2 million left over or whatever it is seems atrocious. And yet, next season, I mean, how many teams are going to go and start spending? I think we're going to see more teams spend because of the flexibility of the new cap terms that are in place. So, what's not to say that Crawford goes for the cash? So do you not take that risk?
If I was Corey Crawford, I would.
Well, no, you would, but if you're the Blackhawks, what do you have behind Crawford?
They could find someone else in the free agency market eventually, I think.
And Matt, to bring this all full circle, is Corey Crawford one of your three goalies for Team Canada in February?
For me, I wouldn't say he is. He's a guy who would be an injury reserve for me. For me, it would be Luongo, Carey Price, and probably Mike Smith. But I would... For me, I don't know why they didn't bring in a younger guy like Jonathan Bernier, for instance. I always thought that if you're going to bring a third goaltender in, it should be someone who's young and has that potential down the road and wants to get some experience now. That's what I
Well, they brought
Bernier
in...
Bernier didn't even get an invite. So. Right.
Braden Holtby did.
Maybe they're betting on Holtby, maybe. So maybe Holtby could be their third guy. But for me, my philosophy has always been, if you're going to bring a third guy, number one, he's not going to play any games. You might as well just bring in a young guy who can learn... soak up the Olympic experience, and then possibly play next Olympics.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. Like, to me, Holtby seems to be the odd choice to have a young guy. Like, you're right, maybe bring in Bernier. I think the only difference between a Holtby and a Bernier, Holtby saw starting action. And he, you know, was able to acquit himself under the pressure and microscope in Washington, whereas with Bernier just didn't have that opportunity.
Bernier has the pedigree, though, which is the difference between the two. Holtby was sort of out of nowhere.
Same three for you, Chris?
I'm going to go with Luongo, Crawford, and Price. And that's just because...
In that order?
In that
Really?
Order. In that
you have
order.
Crawford ahead of Price.
I do.
That was a hand gesture to me, just brushing that off, by the way.
We're definitely great podcasters. Good for radio.
What do you have?
I have Luongo, I have Price second, and I do have... I think Crawford will sneak in ahead of Smith.
You guys love Corey Crawford way too much.
I just think Chicago gets off to a good start, and there's no reason to say they won't.
All we know, that this could change.
Yes.
If any of these other goaltenders who aren't on this Olympic invite list have a great first half, maybe that person will get on the radar. For all we know, if James Reimer or Jonathan Bernier have a great first half, one of those guys could be on Canada's radar.
Cam Ward.
James Reimer.
You sell off. What's so bad about James Reimer?
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm biased, but it's the team he plays for.
Sure, but there's no doubt that he was at least a reason why the Leafs made it to the playoffs.
Okay, fine. Fair enough.
Clay, would you tell Chris that I'm no longer speaking to him for the rest of this podcast?
Chris, Matt is no longer speaking to you for the rest of this podcast.
Okay, well, Clay, if you can ask Matt, are there any other players that he thinks have a long shot to make the team?
Matt, are there any other players that you think are a long shot to make that Canadian national team?
Clay, would you tell Chris that it depends on who has a good first half? For me, I think if Team Canada is looking at guys who can have a good first half, they're going to look at a lot of the young players on the roster. You're going to look at guys like Matt Duchene, because I think a lot of people are selling Matt Duchene short, but a lot of people think Duchene can have a breakout season. Jason Spezza is a guy who got left off the Olympic roster invite list. Maybe he'll have a good year if he clicks with Bobby Ryan. Those are two guys I'm really keeping an eye on.
Matt, you lost me at "Can you please tell Chris?" So, Chris, I hope you heard that.
Yeah, I did. Okay, Clay, what do you think?
I actually got lost in your little quibble, but I think I'm just going to wait to see what happens over the next three months of the season. How's that?
That's fair enough.
Thanks.
And just wrapping this up, I'm just looking at the roster here, and there's quite a few BC boys, at least on the orientation camp roster. I mean, Carey Price from Anaheim Lake, Kyle Arlsner, Dan Hamhuis, Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, Shea Weber, Andrew Ladd, Milan Lucic. I think that's the BC lineup there. And then obviously when it comes to staff, like down list, lots of BC boys.
Some good defensemen coming out of BC.
That's true. And then we all want them to play for Vancouver.
Yep. Except for Keith.
Yeah. Well, we got our Weber eventually. It just doesn't come from BC.
Chris, or Clay, would you tell Chris that we're going to move on now and we're going to talk about Prospects Camp, which is also happening out on the ice now?
Let's do it. Prospects. What do you want to talk about?
Well, Prospects Camp is kicking off, and I want you to ask Chris what his thoughts are on some of these young prospects who are going to come into camp.
Chris, what do you think of these prospects?
You know what? I think it's been a long time coming where we're going to see an actual opportunity for a younger player or younger players to not only crack the roster, but to actually play more than just a depth role. I mean, we saw it so often under Alain Vigneault that he had to have, you know, essentially been presented with no other option. He had to have the Calgary Flames situation where, short of, you know, dressing the equipment guy, he had to play a young player. And Tortorella isn't like that. He's going to play players who he thinks best not only provide the spark, the opportunity, but feels that the only way to develop a younger player is to put him on the ice. And I'm excited by that. So I think for us going into young stars, I'm actually intrigued when I can't say I've really been all that excited to what we would see out of a Young Stars tournament.
Sure, and who intrigues you most, man?
I have to be honest. I think Bo Horvat actually intrigues me. I don't necessarily think he makes the roster.
Mm.
I think he's gunning. I think the kid's a stud. And if he does, I don't know if we actually play him more than the allotment of games before he goes back down to junior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Bo Horvat definitely has me intrigued. Matt.
All right, the freeze out is over because we're talking about Canucks, so I'm unblocking you now. For me, I want to keep an eye on a guy like Kellen Lane. Mm. And I know that's a little shocking because he's sort of under the radar, and there are probably some people who are wondering, who the heck is Kellen Lane? But he's a guy who's physically ready for the Vancouver Canucks roster. He's a huge guy. I think he's about 6'4", 6'5", something along those lines. And I think he's going to get the opportunity to impress the Canucks in camp. Brendan Gaunce, also another guy who I think will open up a lot of eyes. I think maybe Gaunce, Lane, Horvat, those three guys will duke it out for what could be a third or fourth line center role.
Does Schrader stick on the main team this year?
Well, he's going to have to because he's on a one-way deal, right?
See, that I didn't know. This is why it's good to be Robert Madden.
Well, he signed a lesser dollar contract so he could get the one-way deal. Now, for me, that could mean two things. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do believe Jordan Schrader is ready for prime time, or maybe they think that they'll trade Jordan Schrader closer than we think. Because I don't know if they're sold on Jordan Schrader, because let's remember, he's a center. They got a couple of those guys now in Bo Horvat and Brendan Gaunce down the pipeline. Maybe they're thinking Jordan Schrader is a bigger trade asset than he is an actual prospect who can play for them down the line. What do you think, Chris?
I don't disagree with that. I think the Canucks aren't sold on Schrader. And I don't necessarily think he's untouchable either. But it really has, I think, has more to do with not so much the development of players like Bo Horvat, but really the opportunity to bring someone else in. I mean, you know, Schrader provides them depth in the middle, and that's something that the Canucks lack right now. And I don't think we can really acquit Schrader based on his play under AV. AV didn't play him in positions that were conducive to him succeeding. It's similar to how AV had this thought that a young player can't play on anything more than a fourth line. And if you're only going to play, you know, a handful of minutes a game, you're better off playing in the minors. Mm-hmm. So I think under Tortorella, I think Schrader will probably see far better opportunity. He'll be, I would imagine, on the third line. With Richardson on the fourth. Is it possible we'll see that interchange? Well, if Mike Gillis tells us the truth, Richardson's the next Manny Malhotra. Right? So, you know, what does that... Then that could be where we start to see the opportunity where Schrader goes. It depends on Richardson and his ability to play up to the third line as opposed to the fourth line where he's penciled in.
Okay, so we talked about Horvat, Gaunce, Lane as forwards. Let's talk about the D. Pass Corrado. Who else are we excited about, if anyone?
A lot of people aren't talking about this guy, and I think they should, and it's Anton Cederholm. This is a guy who's huge. I mean, well, he's physical.
He's the one that busted up the medicine bowl.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, he's a very physical guy, but the big thing is he's going to play for the Portland Winterhawks next season as opposed to going back to playing in Sweden, mm-hmm. which is huge for me because, as we've seen with guys like Seth Jones and other good defensemen that have come out of the Portland system, they're a bit of a feeder system for NHL defensemen. And I think Cederholm has the physical tools necessary to play in the NHL, but I'm wondering if Mike Johnson and the rest of that Portland Winterhawks staff are going to be able to turn Cederholm into something more than just a physical defenseman. And I think that there is potential there.
Well, just to the Winterhawks, that's what the Winterhawks do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a well-run organization. Mike Johnson has the team and structured to play the Canadian game.
Mm-hmm.
And Cederholm does, he, if it wasn't for the fact he was from Sweden, he looks like a Canadian defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. very consistent, very tough to play against.
And he's actually a very good skating defenseman for his size. Again, he's 6'1", 205 pounds. So the weight-wise, he's already there, I think. But again, I think that he can get there as beyond just a physical defenseman, and I want to see how his skating game takes off from here, if there's any sort of offensive potential in there for him. You said that we can pick defensemen that aren't Frank Corrado, is that correct?
Yes.
So the other one that I want to ask you about is the guy who everyone talked about since he was drafted, and that's Jordan Subban. Is there anything there with Jordan Subban?
Well, according to PK, Jordan is actually the better player of the three at that age.
And very popular in that scrimmage. I don't think he even played, but people were chatting for him the whole time, right?
But that's... Come on, that popularity. It's that he's PK's brother. I mean, we've seen what happens when we get a brother on the team.
Korea?
Yeah.
Fedorov?
Yeah.
That worked out really well.
Didn't we have a Pronger?
At least we had the good
Bury. We had a Sean Pronger as well.
Yeah.
Whose book I read, by the way, was very good.
At least we had the good Bury, though, but... You know, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, well, we had Pavel.
Yeah. Valerie was pretty good, too.
Okay, fair enough.
But we never had Valerie, so we can't... I think there's going to be pressure put on to Subban to perform because everyone looks at PK and decides that's what we have. And what I think the age difference is 6 years between...
Something like
those
that.
Two. So he's got a lot more maturing to do. I mean, look at PK. I mean, really, it's in the last couple of years that he became the player he is. He always had flashes of skill and strength, and it then disappeared from, you know, periodically. So back to Jordan, I think, you know, there's opportunity there, but he's too young.
Okay, so CHB favorite Keith Ballard has moved on back to Minnesota.
He was a CHB favorite?
Well, at least for the two of us.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we did like Ballard.
And Chris Tanev has re-signed, as we know.
I'm so happy.
Is he also a CHB? He was a Light Force favorite.
He's a Light Force favorite.
Okay. So who's our sixth defenseman then? Is it Corrado or is it Andre Alberts?
Well, I think Alberts is seven. And I'm actually curious, like, Alberts coming back here.
Well, sorry, if I can interrupt.
Well, there's Weber too,
if we're going from top to bottom, where are we going? It goes Ham, Hughes, Bieksa.
Well, our big four, yeah.
Edler, Garrison. Those are the locks for the top four. So that really only leaves two spots for four guys.
Give Tanev one of them.
Tanev will get one of them as a five defenseman.
Yeah.
So that means we'll have, you know, Weber, Alberts, Corrado.
Battling out for that six spot.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it really depends on what John Tortorella is going to look for on that given night. If he wants maybe some physicality in their lineup, I guess Andrew Alberts is that guy. He comes cheaper. But then there's Frank Corrado, who's a young guy who we speculated already that Tortorella is going to give some of the young guys a chance to look. So for me, it could go either way. They could both play 45 games each, and maybe Yannick Weber will get into the equation as well if they're looking for a boost on the power play. For me, I guess there is some flexibility in that sixth spot role, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, I didn't want to jump ahead too much, but I know that talking about prospects, and we're going to get into which ones we think we'll actually get into under the big team this year. I do see Corrado as one of those that will. I just think he did decently last year, and I think everything we talked about, Tortorella liking the young guys and him proving himself for a little bit, I think they're going to give Corrado every opportunity to make the team and to stick this year as number six.
What about Peter Anderson?
A lot of people not talking about him. And to be honest, I don't know enough about him because I haven't seen too much of him. But he played for the Wolves last year, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess he's got that pro experience, which should work in his favor a little bit. But you look at the guys who he's going to be battling with for that spot, Yannick Weber, Andrew Alberts, Frankie Corrado. They've got some experience too, maybe with the exception of Corrado. But, I mean, I can't see Anderson leapfrogging any of those three guys.
Agreed.
So we've talked a little bit about prospects, and I think, you know, really let's talk about the greater part of the team and, you know, what we think overall will happen with the Canucks. So, Clay, why don't you start us
off? Can I throw a theory out there, you guys? And I want to get your guys...
Oh, here we go.
No, I had a good visit with my brother today. He's a big fan as well. And this is his theory. He thinks the Canucks are going to win this newly aligned division this year.
Oh.
No, wait, hold on a sec. Now, he said, hey, you know that there's Anaheim, San Jose, and LA in our division now? He goes, yeah, I know. But his theory is this.
Phoenix, too.
Yes. After the 2011 Cup run, where they came so close, they kind of coasted through 2011-12, and they still won the President's Trophy. You with me?
Sure.
They ran into a really hot team that went on to win the Stanley Cup, the LA Kings, that playoff run. So his argument is that they almost coasted, or they didn't really, they weren't as motivated even last year, in last year's shortened season, because of the fact that they lost the hottest team of the playoffs the previous year. So then they got to meet the San Jose Sharks. They weren't the best team by any stretch of the imagination, but a team that played just as well as them, beat them up a little bit, and took them in four straight. He thinks the Canucks have not played their best hockey in 3 years, and that this year, under a new coach, they're actually motivated. They now know what they need to do, and that they're going to win the division. I know it's a little bit, you know, kind of optimistic, but that's his thought.
Well, with all due respect to brother of Clay, is Jason?
It is Jason.
See, I knew that.
Yeah, very good.
With all due respect, like, that was the reason why they fired Alain Vigneault in the first place, because the team knew they were coasting. John Terrell isn't going to let these guys get a free pass. We all know that. So, yeah, there will be motivation, whether it be from the team itself or from John Tortorella supplying it. And for me, maybe they'll realize that they can't take some games off, but doesn't that tire out the team physically more than anything?
Well, it's not so much coasting, it's playing smart. And when Clay had shared this earlier, the thing that became apparent to me, because I didn't really believe that it was a matter that they just took either teams or games for granted, but I think what occurred is the Canucks got into that comfort zone. You look at the Stanley Cup season, and they were foot on the gas throughout. They had clinched the President's Trophy with almost a month to go in the season, and I don't recall there being a soft game after that. It wasn't until the playoffs occurred when we started to see some crazy outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So what occurred the following season? I think the Canucks had just taken for granted that playoffs were the season. This was something we just need to get through, and that's where, you know, the bad habits start to pick up. And that's why I say play smarter. The coasting isn't so much the issue, it's just how you play, and it's the means to focus. I think from time to time, the Canucks are going to have an off night. They have to. It's human nature where you're just not on. Or the team that you're playing against simply is on more. And for me, if I look at last year, the shortened season before that, how often did we see a two-goal lead and all of a sudden as Canucks fans, we freak out because, oh my God, it's a two-goal lead. They're going to go and take it easy. Sure enough, next thing you know, it's a tie game, 2-2. Why? Because in a flash, the Canucks forgot what they were doing. They need to play lights-out hockey. That's their style. At least that's the way they're structured, is to score more than the other team does. Now, I think with Torts, you're going to have some responsibility, and he is going to hold players accountable. That's not to say that Alain didn't, but I think Alain's way of holding players accountable was, I'm going to hold this group accountable, the others, they'll hold themselves accountable. It was two distinct groups.
And you look at the personnel, we're looking at this year's team, it's not a heck of a lot different than last year. You lost Malhotra and LaPierre, and you put in Richardson. So
Derek Roy.
Yeah, and Derek Roy, excuse me. Yeah, thank you, Derek Roy. On the blue line, it's basically the same blue line minus Ballard, as we mentioned. Yep. And goaltending, it's
a watch. Well, Cam Berger.
Yes, of course. So, you know, it's going to be all about what Tortorella brings and the work ethic, the system, just the philosophy, the attitude. And I think that's going to go for a little bit, get some fans interested. Every Eastern team coming through, that's going to get some fans interested. But the Canucks will need to win and win early, or else I think, you know, they could be in danger of losing a bit of support in this marketplace.
Well, I mean, for me, if I can just jump in here, Chris, what we're still forgetting is that this is John Tortorella's first foray into the Western Conference, his first foray into a city that arguably has one of the top five most difficult travel schedules in the NHL. Those are things that are going to have to be learned on the go for John Tortorella. And that's why I have my negative connotations about how this team is going to do this season. And again, ultimately, we're forgetting that this realignment means that they're in that division with the Ducks, the Sharks, the Kings, the Coyotes. Those are all very good teams. We're not even talking about the Oilers, who should be improved this season. Those are ultimately five teams and only three available spots, or four available spots if you're really looking at it, that are available.
It's funny you mention that. And as to what expectations are, because we asked our readers on Twitter what their expectations were, and without a doubt, and I mean, I'm doing some rough math here, the majority expect a Stanley Cup. Somehow they feel that the Vancouver Canucks are going to produce a Stanley Cup this year out of the previous seasons. Now, with expectations of the Stanley Cup, is that just a Vancouver Canucks fan having expectations that are far too high to produce? Or is this valid where every fan should expect that their team wins a Stanley Cup?
I think part of being a fan is you hope that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and that you have some semblance of a chance to win. Otherwise, why would you invest so much time, money, energy into a team? You wouldn't do that for a team that stinks or that doesn't have a hope. The fact that we were there just two summers ago, just about knocking on the door, I think that gives us hope, that gives us optimism. And I think, honestly, the fact that our roster isn't a heck of a lot different than it was 2 years ago, I think that also gives hope. But Matt, I love what you said about the new coach, the travel, the new teams, the alignment. It's going to be a big season of flux, a big season of uncertainty. And I'm fascinated. I truly am looking forward to the season as a fan, just because I want to see how they do and how they react.
Look, nothing has been the same for me since they lost the 2011 Stanley Cup. Expectations have changed for me. Before, it used to be win the Stanley Cup every season. No one comes into any season saying, oh, I just hope to do okay. I just want to make the playoffs. No, if you don't win the Stanley Cup, you're a loser just like every other 29 in the teams that didn't win the Stanley Cup. But for me, this team and all the things that you just mentioned, Clay, they're going to be hard-pressed to make the playoffs for me. And that's just to make the playoffs. I can't see this team making the playoffs. And I'm sure we're going to revisit this podcast 7-8 months from now and wonder, what the heck were you thinking, Matt? Or, Matt, you were right. But for me, I can't see this team making the playoffs.
So we got my brother saying they're going to win the division. We got Matt saying they're not even going to make the playoffs. Chris, what says you?
I think they're making the playoffs, but I think they're hard pressed to perform beyond making the playoffs. And if they do, it's sort of akin to how the Canucks were in 94 and in 82 when we saw runs from really overachieving teams. But back to what some of our followers on Twitter said. And Kim Wilson, who is at KDWilson666, which is kind of an omen. She says she expects a whole new world on the ice from the Canucks this year. Had some good changes, we all hope. And similar to that, Garrett Ralston, at Gator Ralston, that's a tongue twister, says to play hard against good teams, beat the lesser teams, make a strong run for the cup, no diving, no chirping, no BS. So similar thoughts. I like what Sean Klassen, at SSKlassen19, says. Expect and want are two totally different things. And I think that tweet says it all. I mean, what do I expect the Canucks to do? I expect them to make the playoffs, barely. What do I want them to do? I want them to win the Stanley Cup, like every other Canucks fan does.
They're not gonna. They're not gonna any of those things.
Really?
It's sinking in for me because this team, on paper, yes, is pretty close to the team that won it all in 2011. But that's just the problem. They're the team that was so close to winning the Stanley Cup. They're still thinking about how they were oh so close. Mentally, this team is fractured for me. The Sedins, that's why they've regressed over the last couple of years, because they can't help but think how close we were to winning the Stanley Cup, and they blew it. Ryan Kessler hasn't been the same physically or mentally in my mind. And for me, unless they can find a way to get over that hump and move on from 2011, they're not even going to contend for the playoff or the Stanley Cup again. Sorry to be negative, Nelly.
Yeah, that's just what I think. Maybe you're the one real Canucks fan. I want to agree with you. I want to say that that's where things will be, and only to temper my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I've just seen too many good things, and I am afraid that the Canucks, because everything is cyclical, will go into a dark period.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the Canucks don't go and do something small; they do something big, and that dark period scares me. I remember many dark periods, and I've only been following the Canucks since the 80s. If you've been a fan of the Canucks for longer than that, you've obviously paid attention to some darker periods. One other comment from Twitter just before we move on is apologies to Camilla L., who is at Read Dream Right, who tweeted, "I expect a media overload of stories about Luongo remaining after all last year's trade drama." I guess we're playing into that.
Well, we did our part today for sure. As we have been for
There's going to be questions every night, it seems like, about whether or not, what's Luongo thinking. There will be questions to him every practice, every post-game saying, "So what did you think of that game? Oh, by the way, are you staying in Vancouver after this season?" That's probably the mentality that a lot of the mainstream media will be thinking.
Yeah. So, okay, seeing as you're, you know, down on the Canucks there, Matt, we had a question from Twitter from Wolf Lincoln, who is at Wolf Lincoln. Who asks, quite simply, are we going to make an effort to win this year? Still hoping for the best.
Well, it depends on what you're winning. Are you going to win games? Yeah, they'll win games. But are they going to win enough games to make the playoffs is the real question. And again, I just see them barely missing the playoffs.
Clay?
I just love this tweet. It says, are we going to make an effort to win? I think they'll make the effort, for sure.
Well, Tortorella will make sure that right. They give the effort.
I think I'm kind of in the middle of Matt and my brother. I think the Canucks will make the playoffs, maybe finish third or fourth in the division and get in, and then not sure how well they'll do once they get there, but I think they do get in.
Well, third and fourth in the division is not a guarantee based on the new divisional setup. I think
third you can third get is in. A guarantee.
Third yeah. is a guarantee?
Fourth is the questionable one because yeah. only the top three in each division are okay, blocks. Okay.
So I'll say third, just so third. I can say they
just,
get in.
Just so you're safe. Okay.
There you
go. I agree. They're going to make the effort. Yeah, Tortorella doesn't allow anything less than that to happen. Mm-hmm. I believe they're making the playoffs. I think I truly look at this team as becoming more more white collar. And that's when the Canucks had their success with this group, was when they played the white collar, skill, finesse, speed game. Every time we saw this team try to become blue collar, they got beat up. Boston beat the daylights out of them. And as soon as the Canucks went blue-collar in that series, series over.
Mm-hmm.
LA was a blue-collar team. Canucks tried to play blue-collar, they got beat up. San Jose, Canucks tried to go blue-collar, mm-hmm. they got beat up. They're not a blue-collar team. And so it behooves me to think that they have this idea, or at least had, and maybe that's the coaching acumen that was in play here, that they were a blue-collar team. Like, why go away from what makes you good?
Well, probably this is a topic for another day, but let's remember the guy who really thought they should be a blue-collar team was Mike Gillis. Mike Gillis, who said, "We need to get bigger," when they got eliminated from the playoffs against the LA Kings. He said, "We needed to get bigger," and so now it seems like Barker. Zach Kastin is the, yeah, the topic I'm really bringing up here. They thought they needed to get bigger, so he traded for Zach Kastin. He traded Cody Hodgson for Zach Kastin. But now it seems like he's going back on those words now because he's thinking to himself, we have to go back to playing a skill game.
Because of the way Chicago won the
Stanley Exactly.
Cup.
Yeah.
And it's funny you mentioned that because you look at, we talked about the roster and past the Sedins, and I agree, working as a blue-collar team hasn't worked for us. Yet you look at the guys that you want to have the flash and dash, and we're kind of not sure. Kessler, Burrows, Higgins, Hansen, and Booth. You look at those five forwards, right? We have the Sedins, we have Cassian, then you have Weiss and Cecito at the bottom. Is that enough to get us there?
I think it is. Top two lines.
Yep.
You play white collar. I mean, yep. The third line could maybe be a mixture, and your fourth line's your blue collar line.
Sure.
I think Tortorella, I mean, he's this many times where he talks about people cast him as a defensive coach. That's not the case. He simply says, I applaud skill. I want offense so long as it fits within the system. And, you know, that's no different in a way Mark Crawford coached or even Alain Vigneault. But I think where the difference occurred is that Crawford was offensive system, Vigneault was defensive system. Tortorella is simply saying, I want the system. He acknowledged that you need goals to win. He acknowledged that one of the most successful periods of time for the Sedins was when, one, they had the puck, and they had the puck at length. So I think for him, he views the defensive system as if the Sedins are cycling the puck up, you know, on the other side of the blue line. Yeah, that's defense. The strongest defense is when the other team doesn't have the puck.
Should we put a bow on the show here, guys? What are you thinking?
Well, I think we're going to put a bow.
Yeah.
But we got haiku.
Really quickly. Oh. My new favorite part. You're half Japanese, so you should appreciate at least 50% of this.
I don't even know how many syllables are in the haiku, I'm a very bad Japanese guy.
Just, you know, Matt was going through this with us prior to recording, and he thought a 13-syllable poem qualified as a haiku. But, Chris, you're not even Japanese, and you know that it is indeed
17 syllables.
All right, so here's the best of 575 for the week. Jeffrey Kong, @Jeffrey_Kong, his haiku says this: hockey season starts. Will the Canucks win the cup? Please don't riot, though.
Well, that was good.
That was good.
I was moved by that.
Good friend of mine named Lee Ramsden, known him for 20 years back from UBC days. He's at FSS Lee Ramsden. That's Fighting for Stanley. This is his haiku. Matt, you like this one. Canucks, little change. They need to shake up the group. Maybe miss playoffs.
Lee, that was poetic. I love that. I have goosebumps after hearing that one.
Got a couple more. All About Sports, @AllAboutSports77. Here's the haiku. Happening in June, Canucks Stanley Cup Parade. Luongo still king. Chris, reaction to that one?
Well, that's what I want. I can't say that's what I expect.
No problem. We got two more. I think it says Naivety Star, and it's @Lady_Norimon. I don't even know what this means, but here's her haiku. I missed the live blog. Peanut Butter Burrows time, staying up quite late.
Peanut Butter Burrows time, Peanut Butter Burrows time.
Thank God this is an audio podcast. And lastly, this is from my friend Chrissy M. Chua. Chrissy Chua, it's @ChrissyMChua, and her haiku is, John Tortorella, will you make it happen for the Canucks this year?
That's the big question.
There you go.
And I guess that's how we're going to end the show.
Pretty much. Before we do, final word, Matt.
They're not going to make the playoffs, and I'm sure I'm going to take some heat for this after everyone listens to the show, but I want you to see the team prove me wrong. I'm just not a believer right now.
Clayton.
By the time this thing comes out, this podcast, it'll be exactly 1 month until the season starts. Single game tickets go on sale. Just really interested in looking at the mood and the attitude and the optimism in this fan base over the next month. We'll see. Hopefully a bit more optimistic than Matt, but maybe not much. But we'll see.
Me, there are many things that I want. However, there are only a few things I expect. And all I can tell you is I expect that the podcast will end shortly. So, thanks for listening. Matt, hope you come out again.
I'm sure I will if I can manage to drive here and get here without getting lost.
You did a good job. We like Richmond. We like beautiful... We have to shout beautiful Steveston once again.
Although, because this is an evening podcast, the mean streets of Steveston, probably heard a dog fight out there, some bikers that, you know, drove by.
That's true. Yeah. That was just Chris's family.
That's true.
Yeah.
Title. We need a title for this episode.
Oh, God.
And I'd like to think we got one. And for those of you who've been here last few times, you know that the master of the title is Paul DeBron.
Good Richmond High grad.
Friend of the show.
And I don't judge him for being a Richmond High grad, but yes, definitely a friend of the show. And Clay, I think he sent you what the title of this episode is going
to
be.
Yeah, just so you know, we've asked Paul DeBron, like we said, a good friend, to help us name our podcast. He's done a great job. And today he suggested, and I'm glad Matt's here to explain this, he suggested that our title is going to be Douglas Lee is a beast. And he just simply said, there's your title. Matt, explanation, please.
Okay, for those who do know Paul DeBron, a.k.a. Milt Siegel, he goes to the gym quite often. He's a pretty big guy. But Milt Siegel and my dad go to the gym together, and they actually do work out together from time to time. And he likes how big my dad is because I guess it makes Paul DeBron look not as big. But he told me the other day that my dad did 345 on the bench press like it was nothing. And that's probably why he wants to say Douglas Lee is a beast. I wish I could say I had guns like Paul DeBron or Douglas Lee, but not quite there yet.
Well, if you've got guns, you left them in the car.
I did. I better go check on that right now.
Yeah. So while Matt's checking on his guns, I just want to let you know we love that you're listening. Leave us some great feedback if you can, or not so great feedback. We just want feedback on iTunes. Give us a star rating of some sort. We're on New and Noteworthy. We want to be on the hottest podcast shortly. But if you're ever looking to reach us, you can, again, get us on Twitter. Myself, Chris Golden, at Lightforce. Matt Lee, who is at Matt Lee
980.
Thank you. And Clayton over there is at Canuck Clay. We're also Canucks Hockey Blog, at Canucks Hockey on Twitter, CanucksHockeyBlog.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Pinterest. You can find us everywhere that CHP is. We have Pinterest? We have Pinterest.
Wow.
Yeah. That's when you know we've made it to the big leagues. And one last note. It's important you listen to the next episode. We are going to have a contest. We're going to be giving away some sweet Canucks loot. Can't share with you quite what it is yet because I want you to, oh my goodness, I want tickets, I want jerseys, I want a player. Like, we might contest a player.
We're titillating the listeners.
Douglas Lee may show up at your place.
That too, and he is a beast. With that, we're out. And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
Keeping up with us. Amateurs.